We are continuing chapter 18 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. He just had that interesting little interaction with Rita Skeeter. Very glad to get away from Rita Skeeter, Harry hurried back into the room. The other champions were now sitting down in chairs near the door, and he sat down quickly next to Cedric, looking up at the velvet-covered table, where four of the five judges were now situated. Professor Karkaroff, Madame Maxime, Mr. Crouch, and Ludo Bagman. Rita Skeeter settled herself down in a corner. Harry saw her slip the parchment out of her bag again, spread it on her knee, suck the end of the quick quotes quill, and place it once more on the parchment. "May I introduce Mr. Ollivander," said Dumbledore, taking his place at the judge's table and talking to the champions. "He will be checking your wands to ensure that they are in good condition before the tournament." Harry looked around, and with a jolt of surprise, he saw an old wizard with large, pale eyes standing quietly by the window. Harry had met Mr. Ollivander before. He was the wand maker from whom Harry had bought his own wand over 3 years ago in Diagon Alley. "What facts did you have?"
"Just regular British."
"Okay. Mademoiselle Delacour, could we have you, please? First, please." That wasn't regular British. Said Mr. Ollivander, stepping into the empty space in the middle of the room. Fleur Delacour swept over to Mr. Ollivander and handed him her wand. He said. He twirled the wand between his long fingers like a baton, and it emitted a number of pink and gold sparks. And then he held it close to his eyes and examined it carefully. "Yes," he said quietly. 9.5 inches, inflexible rosewood and containing, dear me. "An heir from the head of a villa," said Fleur, "one of my grandmothers. So Fleur was part villa, thought Harry, making a mental note to tell Ron. And then he remembered Ron wasn't speaking to him. "Yes," said Ollivander. "Yes, I've never used Vila hair myself, of course. I find it makes for rather temperamental wands, however, to each his own, if this suits you." Mr. Ollivander ran his fingers along the wand, apparently checking for scratches or bumps, and then he muttered, "Orchideus," and a bunch of flowers burst forth from the wand tip. "Very well, very well. It's in fine working order," said Mr. Ollivander, scooping up the flowers and handing them to Fleur with their wand. "Mr. Diggory, you next." I guess he's a player, isn't he?
Mm-mm.
Got her some flowers?
Just read.
You mad at me?
No, you're just being annoying. There.
Fleur glided back to her seat, smiling at Cedric as he passed her. "Ah, no, this is one of mine, isn't it?" said Mr. Ollivander, with much more enthusiasm as Cedric handed over his wand. "Yes, I particularly remember it well. Containing a single hair from the tail of a particularly fine male unicorn. Must have been 70 hands. Nearly gored me with his horn after I plucked his tail. 12.25 inches, ash, pleasantly springy. It's in fine condition. You treat it regularly?" "Polished it last night," said Cedric, grinning. Oh, no.
Did he say 70 hands or 7 hands on the unicorn?
17.
Oh, gotcha.
Harry looked down at his own wand. He could see finger marks all over it. So gross.
Go ahead.
He gathered a fistful of robe from his knee and tried to rub it clean surreptitiously. Several gold sparks shot out of the end of it. Oh no. Fleur Delacour gave him a very patronizing look, and he desisted. Mr. Ollivander sent a stream of silver smoke rings across the room from the tip of Cedric's wand, pronounced himself satisfied, and then said, "Mr. Crumb, if you please." Oh, when he gets to Harry's, he's going to be like,
Just perfect. Read. If you interrupt one more time, I'm going to hurt you.
Sorry. Victor Crumb got up and slouched, round-shouldered and duck-footed, toward Mr. Ollivander. He thrust out his wand and stood scowling with his hands in his pockets of his robes. "Said Mr. Ollivander, "this is a Grigorovitch creation, unless I'm mistaken. a fine moan maker, though the styling is never quite what I... However, he lifted the wand and examined it minutely, turning it over and over before his eyes. Yes, hornbeam and dragon heartstring, he shot at Crumb, who nodded. Rather thicker than one usually sees, quite rigid. 10¼ inches. Avis. The hornbeam wand let off a blast like a gun, and a number of small, twittering birds flew out of the end and through the open window into the watery sunlight. Good, said Mr. Ollivander, handing Crumb back his wand, which leaves Mr. Potter. Harry got to his feet and walked past Crumb to Mr. Ollivander. He held out his wand. Ah, yes, said Mr. Ollivander, his pale eyes suddenly gleaming. Yes, 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 how well I remember. Harry could remember it, too. He could remember it as though it had happened yesterday. 4 summers ago, on his 11th birthday, he had entered Mr. Ollivander's shop with Hagrid to buy a wand. Mr. Ollivander had taken measurements and then started handing him wands to try. Harry had waved what felt like every wand in the shop until at last he had found the one that suited him. This one, which was made of holly, 11 inches long, and contained a single feather from the tail of a phoenix. Mr. Ollivander had been very surprised that Harry was so compatible with this wand. Curious, he said, curious. And not until Harry had asked what was curious that Mr. Ollivander explained that the phoenix feather in Harry's wand had come from the same bird that supplied the core of Lord Voldemort's. Harry had never shared this piece of information with anyone. He was very fond of his wand, and as far as he was concerned, its relationship to Voldemort's wand was something it couldn't help. Rather, as he couldn't help being related to Aunt Petunia. However, he really hoped that Mr. Ollivander wasn't about to tell the room about it. He had a funny feeling Rita Skeeter's quick quotes quill might just explode with excitement if he did. Mr. Ollivander spent much longer examining Harry's wand than anything else. Eventually, he made a fountain of wine shoot out of it and handed it back to Harry, announcing that it was still in perfect condition. Thank you all, said Dumbledore, standing up at the judge's table. You may now go back to your lessons, or perhaps it would be quicker just to go down to dinner as they are about to end. Oh, okay. They were asking something. Feeling that at last something had gone right today, Harry got up to leave, but the man with the black camera jumped up and cleared his throat. Photos, Dumbledore, photos, cried Bagman excitedly. All the judges and champions. What do you think, Rita? Yes, let's do those first, said Rita Skeeter, whose eyes were on Harry again, and then perhaps some individual shots. The photographs took a long time. Madame Maxime cast everyone into shadow wherever she stood, and the photographer couldn't stand far enough back to get her into the frame. Eventually, she had to sit while everyone else stood around her. Karkaroff kept twirling his goatee around his finger to give it an extra curl. Crumb, who Harry would have thought would have been used to this sort of thing, skulked half-hidden at the back of the group. The photographer seemed keenest to get Fleur in the front, but Rita Skeeter kept hurrying forward and dragging Harry into greater prominence. Then she insisted on separate shots of all the champions. At last, they were free to go. Harry went down to dinner. Hermione wasn't there. He supposed she was still at the hospital wing having her teeth fixed. He ate alone at the end of the table, and then returned to Gryffindor Tower, thinking of all the extra work on summoning charms that he had to do. Up in the dormitory, he came across Ron. "You've had an owl," said Ron brusquely the moment he walked in. He was pointing at Harry's pillow. School barn owl was waiting for him there. "Oh, right," said Harry. "And we've got to do our detention tomorrow night, Snape's dungeon." He then walked straight out of the room, not looking at Harry. For a moment, Harry considered going after him. He wasn't sure whether he wanted to talk to him or hit him, but both seemed quite appealing. But the lure of Sirius's answer was too strong. Harry strode over to the barn owl, took the letter off its leg, and unrolled it. "Harry, I can't say everything I would like to say in a letter. It's too risky in case the owl is intercepted. We need to talk face to face." By the way, if the owl is intercepted, wouldn't they have so much information already?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. "Can you ensure that you are alone by the fire in Gryffindor Tower at 1 o'clock in the morning of the 22nd of November. Also, if the letter were intercepted, they could peek in on that. Anyways. I know better than anyone that you can look after yourself, but while you're around Dumbledore and Moody, I don't think anyone will be able to hurt you. However, someone seems to be having a good try. Entering you into that tournament would have been very risky, especially right under Dumbledore's nose. Be on the watch, Harry. I want to hear about anything unusual. Let me know about the 22nd of November as quickly as you can. Sirius. And that's the end of chapter 18. Should we stop there? Okay. So for you cute Carrie listening to this later, I love you so much. You're the sweetest girl ever. You're a beautiful care kid.
I love you, my dressy bear.
I love you, my care kid. Good night.